Welcome to the Ethereal Podcast. I am your host, Katie Sloan. I am an artist, a spiritual life coach, and a Reiki master and teacher. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about the ethereal realms, angels, supernatural experiences, all of those things that seem really woo-woo and way out there, and we're going to be keeping it real. We're going to be normalizing these things because as we move into this golden age of Aquarius, this new 2000-year cycle, our consciousness really raises, and these experiences are becoming more and more frequent as we tune in to those frequencies that are all around us. And so sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Ethereal Project. I'm Katie Sloan, and today I'm joined by my very own husband, Barry Sloan. Welcome, Barry.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So today I'm very excited because we're going to be talking about your experience at Seal Fit with Mark Divine and how that really impacted the role that you played on the show Six. For the History Channel. We're also going to talk a little bit about you being an ambassador for Movember, the mental health charity for men. So let's start by talking a little bit about that. Tell me what happened. You got the role on Six and then you went into Seal Fit.
Yeah. When we were in discussions for the show, we were told there was going to be a boot camp was going to be an element of the training. However, at the time, we didn't know kind of whether it was going to be an actor's boot camp or it was, you know, going to be a real, like, military boot camp, and it turned out to be the latter. But actually, just before we get into the story of this, there's an interesting thing which suits this podcast. You talk about visualization and bringing things into your reality, right?
Yeah.
I remember 6 to 8 months before I started Seal Fit, we were in Waterstones in Santa Monica, and we were walking past the workout section, and I picked up a book which was 6 Weeks to Seal Fit, written by an author called Mark Divine. I paid no attention to who it was written by, but the logo was on the front, and it was, and then, you know, I've got to be honest and say I didn't do it. I bought the book, I didn't read the book. Yes, but it was on the side of my bed.
Yeah.
It was on the side of my bed for that 6 months leading up.
So unbelievable. You were like seeing that maybe in that. So that kind of ties in with vision boards as well. And that's the whole point behind a vision board. If you create a board and you see those images of what it is you want to create in your life every day, that's constantly being programmed into your psyche. So
and it comes into your everyday. I mean, that's it. Just be careful what book you pick up.
Yeah.
Could end up being Seal Fit.
Be careful what book you put on your bedside.
You could end up having to being trained by Navy SEALs.
It could manifest in your life in a torturous way.
Yeah.
So I can personally affirm that you came back almost broken from Seal Fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You couldn't walk.
No.
I had to nurse your chafing wounds.
Chafing legs.
And
I mean, anyone who's done actual Navy SEAL training will know that your legs were probably more chafed than mine were, but I did have sand chafing, which is deeply uncomfortable. But, I mean, it was an incredible experience, I'd say a crucible experience, something that has changed my mindset as a person. We were told that that would be the case, and, you know, Mark at the end of the training said, this will stay with you forever. You'll be very thankful for it. You won't be thankful for it tomorrow or in a week or maybe in a month. But once you get past the initial shock to the system, it'll start to reorder the pathways in your brain, the way you handle trauma and kind of what's in your wheelhouse of uncomfortableness.
Yeah, you know. It was very traumatic. So just tell us a little bit about what you went through.
Okay, well, we first got there and were dropped off by the producers, and the next day we started basically on what was a 4 or 5 day continual workout with outbreaks. Really, there was some sleep allowed in the middle of it, but you know, we would train all day. You know, they fed us a lot of food because we were going through a lot of calories, so we were really well fed.
Was it a hike or?
There was lots of different things. So on the first day, you'd go through what the SEALs would call a PT test. So you'd go through max push-ups, max pull-ups, max sit-ups, and then a timed 1 mile run at the beginning of each one. And then they kind of know what your levels are. And of course, for a bunch of five guys who'd never met each other before, there's always a lot of testosterone and a lot of posturing for position between dudes anyway. That's kind of a stupid male practice. Male. Yeah, it's just there all the time. And so then you put competition in front of these guys who don't know each other, who don't want to back down. You know, it was quite a shock to start with. And obviously we'd all been cast as Navy SEALs, so nobody wanted to look weak. So there was a little bit of throwing up going on, and kind of everyone was pushing themselves really hard to start with, which was a bad idea because that really was just the tip of the iceberg.
Wow.
You know, but then it became it stopped being physical pretty quick, because then we went swimming for the best part of 3-4 hours in a pool, up and down, cramp setting. From there, I then thought, oh, it must be lunch or something, because my mindset was still on, I'm an actor training for a thing. But then we went on a long hike along the beach with some sandbags, and we had to go and introduce the sand to the water. So we'd fill a sandbag full of water and then go get it wet. And then we would carry that sand with us along the beach for many miles. And if you go to Encinitas, you'll know on the beach, as you're walking down, there's a load of steps that go up to the road. So it's like Santa Monica Bluffs. So you'd hike to the top of the steps, then back down to the beach and keep walking. And every set of steps, you'd go up and down and keep walking. And the rucksacks that we'd been given, either by design or by idiocy in the production office, all snapped. So none of our rucksacks worked. So we were then carrying these heavy bags.
Oh my God.
Whichever way we could manage. And so, you know, and it was obviously problem solving, and everyone was still in there, very much in their individual mindset at that point. So rather than take it in turns perhaps and give somebody a rest and take their sand for them, let them rest up and then switch back, maybe carry two bags at a time, everyone was still trying to look strong at that point. So we weren't working as a team at that point. And then I won't go in and out of what we did for every day, but it culminated in day three. We had a very long day. Oh no, it's something really interesting which we'll sit in here, we were on the end of the second day, we were told we were getting up at 4 a.m. to go to the meditation and yoga studio. Which
nice.
Yeah, which I didn't envisage. I mean, obviously it makes sense now, but at the time I didn't see that as part of the SEAL training.
Did
the
you
SEAL
think
aesthetic.
It was, you thought it was some kind of prank when they said that?
Well, I thought it was going to be torture in there, yeah. But actually, you know, Mark Devine is an incredibly tough man, both physically and mentally. He worked on us with box breathing, with yoga movement, you know, with kind of getting control of our brains. Because knowing we were going into another day of, I mean, a lot of people would describe it as torturous.
Yeah,
you know, it's designed to be torturous. It's designed to push you to your perceived limits, and then help you get past those limits to draw new lines in the sand.
Mm.
And so that's kind of what, that was a real eye-opener for me, working with them.
So when you were in the meditation studio, did he give you specific things to visualize?
He worked very much on your why. So it was why are you doing this? Why? What will get you through when in your times of struggle?
I've just had a really humorous thought. So he's asking you why you're doing this, and were you not thinking, I have no idea because I'm an actor, I'm actually not a Navy SEAL, I don't know why I'm here, I guess I was thinking that as your wife at home.
Yeah, I guess that was part of it, because you know, a lot of people who go and do the SEAL fit or the training that they do, you know, they kind of pay to go do it. I mean, you choose it as part of this experience in you. We were thrust into it. So they have this Kokoro training thing, which you're supposed to be in very good shape in the first place, and you're supposed to probably train for 6 months to a year. to do it. And obviously we were given a condensed version of it. We weren't expected to do the full version of what these guys who go and do the training do. But, you know, they trimmed and curated it to what we needed, character based as well. I mean, I'm not a method actor as such. However, the deep dive experience for this character, I really enjoyed. I don't think I would have been able to have played Joe to the extent that I did without the experience, and certainly the bond between me and the other actors in that show would not have been the same had we not been through a shared trauma together, which we could look in each other's eyes and you know, you could see that we'd been through something, and the audience does the rest. That makes that a bigger war scenario in the show. But just for us, we knew what it was, you know?
Yeah. Amazing, really, that you all went through that. Mm-hmm. And at the time, like you say, you weren't quite sure what you would get from it. But going forwards now, a couple of years later, you've got... Would you say that you are mentally stronger because of it?
Absolutely. But I had... you know, there was a moment where... I don't like degradation, and I didn't like some of the other actors being pushed, and myself being pushed to what I perceived to be degrading levels. I didn't like to see actors break, you know, and so I, at one point, I literally was like, fuck this, no, and I refused. I said, this is a fuck, you know, I can't really remember exactly what I said, but I don't think I was particularly polite. And then one of our SEAL advisors, Mitch, who has been a great guide through this and subsequently through some of the stuff that we'll talk about later. You know, he could see the anger that was in me, and I remember him saying, you know, I don't know what this is exactly, but you need to use this rage, this drive that is in you. And he said, what you've reached is a line in the sand of what you perceive to be fair, what you deceive, your value is this. And you don't want to move past this line. And what I'm asking you to do is draw another one, like break past your perceived limits, surprise yourself, and also don't let the other guys down. Like, if they want to keep going, you be there for them. And so that enabled me to keep pushing, and each one of us had breaks at different points and required different types of coaxing and retraining, and you know, allowing some of that, I guess, animalistic rage to come out, because as a male, sometimes in society you're supposed to hold that back, and not really allow that out as much. And so it was liberating in some ways to just be rageful when necessary, in a controlled place, with a drive. Yeah, I guess.
So interesting. Mm. So the visualization, the meditation, did you feel that helped you to push on through the day?
Hugely. Now, I wish I would have been as far into my journey with it as I am now, because I would have been so much more better prepared, perspective-wise. Mm. I think my ego was much more ugly than it is now at the time. And when I say that, what I mean is I thought I was better than it, when how could I be better than these people who go for this training for real and then go to war and then actually put their life on the line? Like,
so do you mean you felt like you thought you were like better than Jim in the SEAL? I felt like
I didn't need to do it. That's what my ego was saying at the time. It was like, you don't need to be doing this.
No.
You push, but you know, like, you're an actor. Like, literally, I had that, but...
Now, here's the flip side. I actually still do agree with that. I don't think that you actually did need to do that, because you are an actor. However, I think that it was invaluable now, looking back, that you did do it. And I think it was actually a great gift, great blessing in disguise.
Agreed.
But if we go back to actually what you were doing it for, which was to play a role as an actor, where you pretend to be a Navy SEAL, I'm still not sure what you went through was necessary for that. So I don't think that was your ego at all. I think you're an actor, you were never going into war, you were never doing that.
Understandable, but what it did do, And what it's done subsequently was allow me to not play a Navy SEAL, if you know what I mean. Like, by the time I walked on set, or by the time I walked into the studio to do Call of Duty, I wasn't playing a tough guy. I wasn't playing this big, you know, what would most people perceive a Navy SEAL to be. I'd done enough that I could hold my head high, and I'd had respect from actual Navy SEALs going, yeah, that was a kick in the balls. Thank you for taking it. You know, because they knew it was not good, and it was going to be, like, they couldn't tell us beforehand because we wouldn't have gone and done it. And it was a shock, and it was tough, but, you know, I was then able to sit around the campfire in certain trainings and with these guys who were a completely different people to me, completely different lifestyle, completely different mindset to me, but be on a level with them in some way and be allowed into the inner sanctum, in which not a lot of people are. And so, in regards to roles of that nature, Six and now Call of Duty, that's been a huge help in bringing these characters to life.
Yeah, it gave you that foundation mm-hmm. that you never would have had.
100%.
So let's move on to Call of Duty.
Yes.
Obviously, that has just gone viral.
Yes.
Best-selling game worldwide of all time. Is that correct?
I believe that's a figure that's been touted out. They did 600 million in 3 days.
Wow.
Which is a lot. Obviously, you know, Modern Warfare is a huge part of the Call of Duty history. I played that game when it originally came out in 2007.
Wow.
And I knew of the character. It's the first time ever in my career that I've played the character that has been played before. I've always originated characters. I mean, obviously, you know, you can do a Shakespearean thing or whatever in college or whatever comes before you, but for as far as in my professional career, it's the first time I had to step into somebody else's shoes as such and like reimagine a character, so that was interesting.
So you were playing the game back in 2007, yep. And was Captain Price in the game then?
Yes.
Oh wow, so you were actually playing that character.
Yeah, there's a level within that where you actually play as him, like through his eyes, first person. It's
wow.
called All Gillied Up, and it's set in, as you know about me, I love abandoned places, and I always was fascinated yeah. by Pripyat, which we've now seen in Chernobyl. So it's that place, right?
Yeah, and this is not funny at all, but I'm laughing because...
Because I'm such a geek.
No, well, you have always had this fascination. I love that about you.
It's like you were sounding really cool, and you just told everyone that you're a massive geek.
Just ruined it, ruined your perception.
Well,
of
that's the
no,
truth.
Not at all. I get that it's very quite, you know, it's quite eerie and...
Yeah.
You've always
but just abandoned places in general, I like.
And then you like beasted me into watching Chernobyl, which
yes.
was amazing.
It was incredible.
Very harrowing and stuck with me. For
Kate's
weeks
not Kate's
after.
Not one for anyone listening. Kate's not one for anything remotely troublesome in the movie, TV genre,
okay.
music genre as well. So it was a big ask for her to sit and watch four hours of Chernobyl with
watch
me.
Watch 4 hours of Chernobyl or let's put on
well.
Moana.
Exactly.
Moana, please.
There's only so much Moana you can watch for, love, to be fair.
No, to be fair, that is just because I know things really do affect me deeply. And
that's right. No, it's energetically.
And
I get
in my day-to-day
yeah.
life, if mm-hmm. I carry a heaviness if
yeah.
I watch things
yeah, yeah.
that are... However, it is important to educate yourself. And so I am glad that I watched it.
Well, now you know how a nuclear power plant works,
now
functions, and can, you know,
yes.
melt down.
Now I
if
live
not
with
treated
that
correctly.
Terror that it could happen again.
That's
but
right.
no, we've totally digressed here.
Yes.
So back to Captain Price.
Yes.
You were playing him in 2007.
Yes, in that level.
And now in 2019, you are Captain Price.
Yes.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of the response to the character from the players, you know. It was a great experience, and one that I'll always be thankful for, you know.
Can I ask, how does it compare playing a computerized character in comparison to playing an actual character?
Well, it was to be honest with you, in that sense, it was very much the same, because I was lucky enough to have, you know, all the actors on the studio floor with me. So apart from the fact that you're wearing a Lycra kind of all-in-one bodysuit with dots all over it, dots all over your face, and a camera kind of in front of you, it's like acting in any other scene. And there's no scenery. It's just the room with boxes. So it's acting in its purest form, really. I mean, you can't cheat. You know, like every scene you see in the game, there was nothing there. There was, you know, us with boxes walking around a warehouse.
Wow.
And so the fact that people resonate with the performance means a lot to me, because as an actor, it was pure acting. Everything was imagined. So it's a real compliment for people to have enjoyed it, because we had to work much harder.
Yeah, so even more challenging, because you don't have that visual of your environment around you.
Absolutely.
It's all created.
Well, they'll show you through a camera what it looks like, so you can see the world before you start the scene through the camera. But then once they call action, you know, you're just there. And that's why it's so important to have the other actors, because you just have to lock onto their eyes and keep it real, like see the soul. Yeah. Otherwise, it can drop off.
And with regards to your movement, do you have to be more aware of hitting marks and going to specific
There's
points?
A certain way that they would like the scene to play out. There's parameters to it. So you're within a grid system. So at the edge of the grid, you can't go off because the computer won't recognize it. But within each square in the grid, it's fine because the computer can register where you are.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun one.
Wow. So just in complete contrast, you've just finished filming, thank God, you've finished filming Bluff City Law. I say thank God because you've been in Memphis for
She means geographically,
5 months,
not the show.
Which has been hard not being together as a family.
It has.
But I'm really enjoying the role of
Jake.
Thank you, dear. Very light in comparison to Joe Graves and Captain Price.
Yeah, it is.
Perfect antidote, really.
He did none of the Navy SEAL training to play Jake.
Right.
But it was turned out to be one of the most lovely arcs I've done in television. Great character. Effectively, the story between him and George was basically a love story between these two friends, and how somebody's positive influence in your life can elicit change in a male character, which is kind of unheard of. They usually use a female character to elicit that kind of change in someone like Jake in a show. So to use a character like George within this show was kind of a first for me, and a first for a lot of television. You know, for it to be a platonic friendship between two guys was kind of a really interesting look at the male psyche and male culture as a whole, and how other men's influence in your life is so important. Father figures are hugely important. You know, if you have a society growing up without important father figures, you're not giving them a male reference point. They're having to decide what that is. And society's not painting the best picture of men. So positive male role models in anyone's life is incredibly important. So I like that we explored that.
Yeah, I was very moved by the storyline. And can you tell me, like, doing research into the character, what did anything, like, age you with that character? Because obviously George was massively... There was a huge injustice that happened.
Yes, well, it was wrongful imprisonment, and we just watched When They See Us as well before I started filming that, so it was very current in my head, that kind of story, very sad, and obviously I'd researched into those young men involved in that story, and so it's always important going into jobs. You know, I worked with a beautifully wonderful, talented actor called Mark Rylance on Jerusalem, who said to me, you know, wipe your shoes on the way in and wipe them on the way out, because the character requires nothing of you and you require nothing of it. And so I always try and make sure, if I'm doing something heavy now, in the past I kind of suffered from bringing that home sometimes, the dark cloud, if you're playing a particularly dark character, it just kind of sits. I mean, you go back to your day to day, but you know what, people who aren't obviously married to an actor, go, you know, that's hard enough, but people who aren't around actors just see it on screen. You know, you are embodying a mindset and energy. You're calling in, you know, a type of behavior or eliciting a certain feeling within your brain, your synapses. You are quite literally creating a scenario out of nothing. You're fooling your own brain plus fooling the world. So it's important to make sure that you can separate that from
your reality,
where you are,
from the reality of the character, and wipe your feet like Mark Rylance.
Absolutely. And so Yeah, so that's a big thing for me.
Yeah, and shake that energy off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that actually this, I think the job of an actor is so much, it's so much more, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of the word. It affects you so much more deeply than what you realise.
Yes.
So I think the job of an actor, it just goes so much more deep than what we all realise, really. And even yourself. Now, we're a big believer of our thoughts create things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in that mindset of a character that is, let's just say, perhaps a serial killer,
mm-hmm.
and you have played a serial killer,
yep.
Then that's some dark stuff that you're delving into. And that
yep.
has to then affect your life in a dark way somewhere along
your
the line.
Your thoughts for a time, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, emotionally, and mm-hmm. then the emotional impacts the physical. And so I think it really is so important. We
mm-hmm.
take it lightly. Oh, yes, this actor's playing this role and then they're on to another one. But I actually
well, Heath
think
Ledger
that,
famously, you know, lost himself.
It just ran my
yeah.
mind. I think that in the future, there needs to be something to help actors with their mental health. Like after every job, an actor should go in and should be offered,
mm-hmm.
You know, a debrief and then an analysis of what they need.
How was that experience
to get
for you?
Their energy
I think that's
back
fantastic.
To who they really are, because I think it's so flippant that you'll go in, you play a dark role, and then you're off and out onto the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And have you really shed the energy?
Yeah,
of that
and cleanse
role?
That.
Now, I know that sounds quite like woo-woo and out there, but if you look at how the ratio of many actors that
mm-hmm.
that suffer with depression, and I know in the past you've suffered with depression,
mm-hmm.
thankfully not anymore, but
yeah.
I do believe that's because you've got the techniques now to deal with the different roles that you play and to shake that energy off.
Yeah.
And you do meditate pretty much daily, don't
yeah.
you now?
Yeah, well, I can. Yeah, I think that would be valuable. Certainly, I mean, I've, you know, fortunate enough to have been doing this for 20 years now. So, but it's taken me the best part of 20 years to get to this stage where I'm aware that I'm doing that to myself.
Right.
You know, and that comes with age. So for younger actors, certainly in your early 20s, just out of drama school, really wanting to put in that extra work, you know, you've got to protect yourself from that. And so something along those lines would be really important to kind of just to check in. And companies perhaps should have to do that,
yeah.
whoever hires you to do it. Just, you know, I mean, certainly in the States, you know, mental health is much more talked about issue. In the UK, it didn't seem to be as much, at least when we were there. We haven't been in the UK for coming up for 10 years, so perhaps that's shifting.
Yeah.
I hope it is.
I mean, there's always been a real stigma attached to any kind of conversation geared around mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure why, but
especially within men as well.
Especially with men, like
yeah.
men just won't open up. They won't talk as a rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings us to the charity Movember.
Yes.
You're sporting a very, very interesting moustache at the moment in
well, thank you.
Movember.
Yes. It's something I try to do.
You can shave it off.
Yeah, it's quite festive. No, it's something I try to do every November where I can, if I'm not working. Sometimes I get caught out, you know, I'm halfway through the month and then I have like an important casting and then I'll call up my team and be like, can I go in with a moustache? And they'd be like, I'd rather you didn't.
Can you just explain
can
that
you,
it's for
yeah,
November?
It's not going to work for this role. So sometimes I have to shave it off, sadly, prior than I would like to, or I'm in a job in which I can't grow it mid-episode.
Right.
But at the moment, I'm able to sport this fantastic lip broom.
Nod to the 70s there. yeah, lip broom. It does look like a lip broom. So tell us a little bit about the charity Movember. What do they do?
Well, I was lucky enough for a few years to be an ambassador for them and they're a charity that is looking to raise awareness for men's mental health, get guys talking about it, take away the stigma involved in speaking up, you know, checking in on your friends and seeing how they're thinking. We're all, you know, as guys, very good at talking about anything but what we need to talk about. You know, I have that with groups of my friends. You know, we know we should ask each other how we are, but we'll just talk about football or
music,
you know, rubbish for ages.
Yeah.
And skirt around the idea. Whereas women are very good at checking in with each other. Or maybe that's stereotypical, but perhaps not all women.
No, I think
but there's
you're
definitely
right.
a, there's definitely a perception that that's the case. I don't know if it is for everyone.
Women definitely seem to be more open and more connected with emotion that we can, you know,
yeah.
guys generally tend to shut it out. But the one thing that I love
is that
about
societal law. Is that, you know, is that the case, or are men just like indoctrinated into a system where if they that's to show weakness, you know what I mean? I wonder whether that's inherently male or if that's just something that we've been that's been put upon men. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just kind of wonder, you know, when that stops. Like, are you born with no feelings? Are you born with the inability to feel something, or are you encouraged not to feel it from a young age?
Yeah.
You know, if a boy falls over, don't cry. Boys don't cry.
I know.
You know,
and
that kind of nonsense.
Oh, crying,
that
like
stuff, like stuff, like
that.
Man up.
Well,
rubbish.
Hopefully, that's
good. Too much pressure.
That's slowly making its way out.
I think so.
With the current shift that's
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, one of the great things that Movember does actually, one of the interesting things is they want to encourage barmen and barbers to be a first point of contact. So they want to train bar staff to notice signs in people who are often drinking and kind of be a first point of contact, just not to preach, but to maybe put a card in front of them. And also barbers, because that's two places where men tend to open up, one to a stranger and in a controlled environment.
So interesting. And yeah, brings us back to that whole thing of self-medicating, which we mm-hmm. addressed in the first episode of this podcast with
that
my
was
sister.
Brilliant, by the way. Love that one.
Oh, thank you. I'm so proud of her. But
yeah,
absolutely. I think people go to the pub to drink away their troubles. So mm-hmm. it's actually really smart to train the bar staff to recognize
just
the
signs. Just to see if it's there, yeah.
Because, you know, very sadly, suicide is on the up. And I think Movember really is trying to get that number down, right?
Yeah.
To support men before yeah. it gets to that.
Yeah, so you know, go on the website, Movember.com, and there's sites all over the world now. You can see the numbers that they've managed to help year on year. You know, it's a fun way. I mean, obviously just growing a mustache is kind of hilarious. But there's ways, you know, for women to be involved as well. There's a Move campaign now where, you know, you can just getting in the gym and moving the body can help as well. And so that's important.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, exercise is a form of meditation, really, isn't it?
It's one of the most important things ever.
So to pair like exercise and meditations again is a super powerful combination.
Also, exercise moves. I was told this by my chiropractor just this week. It happens to be your chiropractor. you know, movement moves the spinal fluid, which is the number one conductor in the body, right? So it's also going to help your brain. So that's why it's important in that sense, just from a scientific point of view. If you move your body, you release the spinal fluid throughout the body, and then the synapses will fire and you will feel much better because blood flow will be going to more elements of your body.
Wow, I love that. My chiropractor didn't tell me that information.
She was busy telling me that.
However, it really does link in with the spiritual practice of Reiki and energy
yes.
healing, because the spinal, that energy of the spine is linked in with the seven energy centers of being the chakras that line up through the spine. And having that flow of energy is really vital for overall well-being. So I just want to reference Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone who wants to delve more into this and is more about the science than the spiritual, or is more about bridging the two together, which I really love. His books are amazing, and he does seminars and courses around the world. But you can heal from any point, mentally, emotionally, and physically. And there's been many miraculous cases of healing through Joe Dispenza's work with meditation and working with that energy of the spine. And the Kundalini
right.
energy
yep.
that comes from the base of the spine back up. So science really is bridging that gap with the spiritual and vice versa. So I think that's a really good place to end the podcast. We've
yeah.
covered some really good things. Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
For taking the time to tell us all about your experiences as an actor and about your experience with meditation and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks.